Hello and welcome once again to Tech Plus with myself, Jan, and also Kane. We are ready when you are ready to share all the latest tech news with you from all over the world, including here from South Africa. Hope you had a great week and enjoying your weekend so far. Kane, how's it going?
Yeah, battling the cold, but the war is in going in the right direction. I feel like all the heaters are on maximum at the moment.
Yeah, geez. And somehow, miraculously, the grid is still surviving.
Eskom's living up to what it said, that the load shedding, lack of load shedding is not influenced by the elections.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, if it had come back any time up until now, we'd probably be like, yeah, we were expecting it.
So. Absolutely. I'm actually so surprised we made it this far. I think it's now past the 70-day mark, eh? Don't think we've ever seen anything like that.
That's a long time, eh? That's
a lot of change in the air.
Yeah.
And it's good, man. I like it.
It's almost half a year, a quarter of a year.
Are you sort of... some people say they low-key miss load shedding. Do you sort of miss it?
Well,
in a way,
I have certain feelings towards it because I bought, you know, alternative power systems to survive load shedding, and now they're just sitting there taunting me.
True.
You know, and they're not like you could go sell it.
Because
you're going to be in the mode for purchasing. So I'm actually happy there's no load shedding, because when there was, it's a disruptive schedule. It's not, there's no way that you can get used to it, and you can adapt to it, but you can never really be optimal with it. It controls your life. It controls when you eat, controls when you wake up, it controls when you sleep, it controls what you do in the evenings, it controls how often you work, when you work.
So true.
So I'm actually glad, because it is in a way our way to, you know, have freedom in decision of how we want to operate our days. You know, do we want to have dinners earlier? Do we want to have them later? Do we want to, you know, do we want to watch TV at night? How much do we have to invest into alternative power systems, and where else can we put that money that we were going to put there? So I hope it doesn't come back, truly. But if it does, I'm pretty sure South Africans will be one of the best geared citizens of any country to handle no power.
I saw a guy saying somewhere on social media, and I hope he was joking, but he said he misses load shedding, and every now and then he goes to the switchboard in his house and he just flips the main switch off and he pretends that it's load shedding. I don't know why anybody would do that. I hope he was joking.
Some parents out there are like, you know, the load shedding controlled the kids' TV time so well. Now they just simulated. Oh, no. It's load shedding, guys. No more TV. Time
that,
for bed.
You know, that kind of makes sense now that you mention the children.
So, news today. Wow. News this week really has been quite a turbulent one for certain companies. For example, MultiChoice, our good old DStv, has warned of a potential profit slump. So MultiChoice, the owners of DStv, have informed shareholders that it expects to report a trading profit decline of between 19% and 23% for the year ended 31 March 2024. The company attributed the decline to foreign exchange impacts from weaker currencies against the US dollar and year-on-year Showmax trading losses. However, it said it expects profits to increase year-on-year on an organic basis, which excludes the impact of foreign exchange effects and mergers and acquisitions. Now, this is where I actually feel a little bit for DStv, because they have customer decline, yes, but they also have this diminishing for value against the US dollar, whether it's the Nigerian Naira, because they operate, they're an operator in Nigeria and other African countries as well. So as African countries' currencies weaken, they experience a massive loss beyond what they're already dealing with, which is subscriber fall-off. Plus, you know, in that light as well, they're also trying to put Showmax out there. And Netflix operated at a loss for a long time. In fact, I think they're still overall at a net loss as opposed to a net profit.
So Netflix or Showmax?
Netflix ran at a loss for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, even Disney runs at a loss.
But so why is it still running?
Because once you've covered the cost of bringing it in, it's a money printer. And they get to control media, and they get to, so if they could take huge profits, but I think what they've, like for Netflix, for example, when Netflix was out for its first year, there wasn't many Netflix originals. Now there's a lot of Netflix originals.
That's right.
So they've invested into studios. They've invested into actors that are permanently staffed to Netflix and exclusively rights locked to Netflix as well. So it's an expensive process, you know, no matter how you look at it, whether you're in it for profit or in it for profit in 10 years, it's extremely challenging. And then you have DStv trying to do that and trying to survive their thing and having the diminishing value of currencies against the US dollar and having to purchase a lot of content in dollars. It makes it extremely challenging. Despite the weak operating environment and additional $1.4 billion in Showmax trading losses, the trading profit on an organic basis is expected to increase year on year, said MultiChoice. So despite the currency values and that, they do expect to have their organic profit increase. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But I think they're definitely, you know, unless Showmax gets off, DStv is in trouble. There's just no way that cable's going to outlive you and I having a connection to the internet and watching Netflix on our phone. You know, there's no, who's going to pay R1,000 a month for that?
Yeah, so exactly.
It's going to be tough. Remember last week, speaking of, you know, needing data and internet in order to watch Netflix, I think if you have already an internet connection to your home that you pay for every month, Netflix is incredibly cheap. But I think if you want to watch Netflix, but you're working off a mobile data plan, it's incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
I think even if you reduce how much data is moved per hour, a gig can be like 30, 40 rand, depending on when you buy it, how you buy it, and what package you buy it for. Some data packages last a week and they're very cheap. Mm-hmm. Some last 60 days and they're much more expensive. And then you get the LTE tariffs as well. That's if you're in a zone that can actually support that network bandwidth. So incredibly expensive as a mobile user or someone who doesn't have a fixed internet to actually access Netflix. So you would expect that Vodacom and Cell C would be doing pretty well, but they're actually not. We did look at it about a week or two ago. I think it was the week before last. We said, well, how, if you invested R1,000 into Vodacom, Cell C, and MTN, how much money would you have today if you had bought R1,000 worth of shares? And it turned out that every single one of those would have netted you a loss. Mm. Some of them would have been a R400 loss, so you only would have come out with R600. I think some of them were even less than that. And it's always very cool for me when you look at, well, what would have been a good investment 10 years ago? And how good of an investment would that have been? In crypto land, it's crazy because just one small investment a while ago could be worth a lot of money. So you very rarely hear about the publicly traded stock that if you had invested 10 years ago, it would have made incredible amounts of money, you know? But there is actually one that if you had invested 10 years ago, so instead of taking that R1,000 and putting it into Vodacom or MTN, if you had taken that R1,000 and put it into NVIDIA, which is the guys that make graphics cards for gamers and the guys that make graphics cards for AI, they would have netted you a pretty substantial profit. So NVIDIA's share price on the US stock exchange NASDAQ closed at $1,224 or R23,178 on Wednesday, 5 June. So either $1,200 or R23,000 on the 5th of June. That was 257.31% higher than its closing price of $4.78 or R48 on June 5th. But if you look at what R1,000 would have been worth 10 years ago and what it's worth now today, it would be worth R258,000. So sure. If you had invested R1,000 into NVIDIA 10 years ago, you would have had R258,000 today.
Wow.
That's not considering the currency difference. If you take into account the trading price of Rand. So over the same period, the Rand went from trading at 10 Rand 16 per dollar to 18.93 to the dollar, which means that that same 1,000 Rand today, because the Rand is weaker, would actually be worth 481,000 Rand.
Oh.
So 1,000 Rand 10 years ago nets you half a million Rand.
Why are you telling me now?
Well,
where were you 10 years ago?
You know what's crazy? I think if you sat 10 years ago and you said, what do I think is a good bet to invest in? I would have probably put some money in Vodacom and MTN and Cell C.
I'd probably do DStv. Oops.
DStv as well. You could have, you know, that's not a...
Uh-oh.
So I think it isn't easy to sit here today and say, well, what's worth putting your money into today that's going to be worth money in 10 years? But I always like to think of it like, if I had an app on my phone that would ask me if I wanted to purchase any publicly traded stock every time I made a transaction with my bank card, I would probably aggregate a relatively decent portfolio pretty quickly, as opposed to one day every month sitting down, going to a stock exchange and being like, what company should I invest in this month?
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good way to do it. If you think about what businesses you vendor with that have publicly traded stock, ask yourself, do I have customer satisfaction from these businesses? You know, do I feel like this business has the legs to continue to grow and excel over the next few years? And if the answers to your questions are yes, then it's probably worth looking at, you know, maybe spending R1,000, getting some stock. Just don't sell on the down. And I always think it's cool because AI is massive now.
Yeah.
You know, AI is absolutely massive. And 10 years ago, you would never have predicted it. You would never have said, I'm investing in NVIDIA today because in 10 years, AI is going to be huge. Why you probably would have invested in NVIDIA 10 years ago is IoT, Internet of Things. They're an important or integral component within a computer, and they're probably going to, you know, computers aren't going to phase out. So I think asking the right questions and looking at what's available will help you determine whether or not what you're investing in is a good or a bad idea. And if R1,000 can get you R500,000 in 10 years with a good investment, why would you want to go and put your life savings into something? I think it's a very different situation. R500 would have been R250,000, which means R50 would have been R25,000. So a R50 investment 10 years ago would have been a lot of money today. So don't go invest millions or as much as you can. Invest as little as possible and keep it consistent. Just keep the thought process behind what you're doing and why you're doing it very clear to yourself. And then in 5 years, where you have a little bit of money in something, ask yourself, is it well placed? Do I still feel the same way I did when I spent this little bit of money? You know, do I think that, that's a trajectory that's going to continue? And I think we all could one day see profits like that in 10 years with the right decision making. Talking about right decision making, Takealot has apparently done some damage to Amazon and iStores. When you take a look at an iPhone price showdown. Now, this is what I really like about the tech show now, because, you know, a year ago, we didn't have so many e-commerce competitors.
Yeah, wow.
We had iStore, but we didn't have Woolworths Connect. We didn't have Amazon.
Wow. Yeah, you're right.
You know, even international Amazon is still possible to get to. It's more possible to get stuff into South Africa now through international Amazon than it was a year ago. We have a South African sourced Amazon. So there's actually a warehouse in South Africa, an Amazon warehouse in South Africa with products that you can buy from right now. You have Takealot, you have Bid or Buy, you have a lot of conglomerate tech companies as well. You've got like Evitech, which is like your laptops and computer components expert. You've got Incredible Connection, which has a pretty sophisticated online store at this point. Anything you can get in a store, you can get in their online store. I think the only one we're waiting for now is Kloppers. I think that could be quite good. So apparently Takealot, when compared in terms of pricing, here is some results that you might find interesting. So My Broadband compared the availability and pricing of Apple smartphones across 5 major online retailers. Because what's the point in having all these e-commerce stores if you don't know who to shop at? Or you don't have a strategy to shop to ensure you're getting the best pricing. So the retailers that they took a look at was Amazon South Africa, Takealot, iStore, Incredible, and Woolworths, which are pretty strong tech companies now. So Takealot offered the widest range of iPhone models, 35 out of the possible 38 models. 9 of the models it listed were not for sale through any of the other websites. So Takealot definitely having a quantitative win in that front. And Takealot was also the most affordable for 16 out of the 29 models that were available at multiple retailers. So 50% of the iPhones listed on Takealot were essentially cheaper than the other 50% that are cheaper at other retailers. And Takealot's selection and prices even trumped iStore, which is owned by the same company that is one of South Africa's biggest iPhone distributors. Now, there's an interesting story behind that, because why would iStore be more expensive than Takealot? But Takealot is feeling more pressure than iStore, because iStore is where you go for iPhones. Takealot is where you go for tech. Amazon is where you go for tech. So Takealot has to have better prices than Amazon. And for Takealot to look like the better deal, it has to have a better price than Amazon and a better price than the iStore. So if they're both owned by the same people, kind of makes sense that Takealot currently has the majority share of better pricing. iStore had 29 models available, of which just 4 had the cheaper prices, and 20 of the listings were the most expensive, either alone or tied with another retailer, which was often incredible, which is incredible connection. So Amazon.co.za had prices similar or identical to Takealot. 7 of its models listings were the most affordable. So let's take a look at some of these prices. iPhone SE on Amazon is the same price as the iStore. And here's where we look at iPhones that are cheap on Amazon. This is the iPhone 11, 64GB is about R1,000 cheaper on Takealot than the iStore and Incredible, and is just a bit less than Woolworths. The iPhone 11 is cheaper at Takealot. The iPhone 12 is cheaper at Takealot as well by about R1,000 across the board. The iPhone 12 256 gig is also, it's actually more expensive at Takealot. This one is cheaper at the iStore. The iPhone 13 is cheaper at Amazon and Takealot than the rest of the retailers. The iPhone 13 is cheaper at Takealot. And the iPhone 14 is actually cheapest at Amazon South Africa, funny enough. And the iPhone 15 is, let's take a look at the iPhone 15, is the cheapest at Amazon South Africa. So guys, I think it's a very good idea that if you're considering buying tech, you have 5 different tech retailers. Before you click that checkout, first start by adding that item to your cart across at least Amazon and Takealot.
And then compare it.
And if you have the time, check out, and you're buying iPhone, check out iStore as well.
Yeah.
Or if you're not buying iPhone and or you are buying something else, check out Incredible Connection and Woolworths as well. So you've got Incredible Connection, you've got Woolworths, you've got the iStore, you've got Takealot, and you've got Amazon South Africa. If you don't save money having those 5 retailers at your fingertips, I would be pretty surprised.
Mm.
And if you do happen to spend the most money out of all the offers, now you know for next time that there is other options out there, and we as consumers are better off purchasing from the places that have it cheaper, so where we can tell the companies that if you have cheaper prices, you're going to get the sales, you know, and drive that competition. Speaking about driving competition, South Africa is doing the opposite of that in South Africa, as more and more African countries are integrating Starlink.
Yes, we're left behind, eh?
It is. So South Africa looks to be set to become an island surrounded by countries and areas with official Starlink availability in 2024. The uncapped low Earth orbit satellite internet service has already launched in 2 of South Africa's 6 neighbors. Eswatini and Mozambique has just been approved also in Botswana and Zimbabwe. So Botswana, Zimbabwe, Mozambique all have this coverage already. And the service's official coverage map also shows a 2024 estimated date of availability for Namibia in many other countries in Southern Africa. So what you're going to be seeing is, as you come to the top of Africa, there's going to be Starlink, Starlink, Starlink. As you come to the border of South Africa, you're going to have Botswana, Namibia, all the Starlink, and then South Africa, none. So if you're a person driving from the top of Africa to the bottom, your internet's not going to work anymore when you arrive in South Africa. The furthest away. It's like, come on, guys. Come on. I mean, when someone like SpaceX is using Starlink to keep communications between their ship, their spaceship, and the ground, you know that is a sophisticated internet service. When they're actually using that same service to launch and land spaceships, you know that that must be a pretty reliable system. And I think South Africa would probably benefit from integrating it, and we say it every single tech show, but unfortunately South Africa has no known date. So let's take a look at some of the estimated Starlink delivery dates for some of our neighboring countries. So Angola is estimated for Q3 2024. Botswana is approved and launching in Q3 2024. We have Lesotho, which is unknown. Malawi, which launched in July 2023. Mozambique, which launched in June 2023. Namibia, which is expected to launch sometime in 2024. Zambia, which launched in November 2023. And Zimbabwe, which is approved and launching in Q3 2024. Come on, guys. Let's not that happen. We can't be an island with no satellite internet.
Or serious case of FOMO.
Just bring a competitor in. Even Amazon's Caper, which is another internet service.
Oh, I saw that one, yeah.
That just give us something.
Caper, yeah.
Let us connect our most unconnected regions, please.
Yeah. Well, let's go for some music and then we're back.
Sounds like a plan.
Welcome back to Tech Plus. We're talking about all the biggest tech stories this week. So if you weren't following any of these stories, don't worry. Kane's got you covered. Kane, what have you got for us next?
So here's something I didn't actually know was as possible as what it is. I thought this would be something that only happens internationally. And if it does, it would be very, very niche. It feels like very high-end, like spy stuff. But apparently DStv has busted a pirate kingpin. So let's talk about that. MultiChoice has announced the arrest of a suspect involved in illegally selling pirated internet streaming devices, which enabled users to access DStv content. So the operation was conducted in collaboration with a subsidiary called Ardito and South African law enforcement, and is in the company's second piracy-related arrest in the past week. In a statement on Thursday, the 6th of June 2024, MultiChoice said this latest suspect was arrested for allegedly managing several pirate customers and reselling and selling pirate streaming devices. They also allegedly distributed live TV content, including DStv channels, movies, and series. This is some sophisticated stuff.
I think they busted through his roof, eh?
Man, oh man.
He was still sitting there copying and pasting, and then they came, boom.
This is some serious, like, I don't even know this is possible.
That's very serious.
The entertainment group, with its law enforcement partners, have arrested another suspect involved in the illegal sale of internet streaming pirate devices, which allowed individuals to access MultiChoice content, violating several legal statutes, which is something that MultiChoice actually publicly said. The arrest happened on Tuesday, 4th June, and the suspect faces charges for contravening several laws, including Section 2 of the Cybercrime Act, which relates to unauthorized access to content, Section 44 and 45 of the RICA Act, which relates to the possession and sale of infringing devices, and Section 27 of the Copyright Act in terms of copyright. So they are set to appear at the Kempton Park Magistrates after being granted bail of 3,000 rand.
Yes, I mean,
sir. It sounds like it's so simple. You know, it sounds like 3,000 rand. I mean, that's a very small amount of bail for what is arguably a piece of tech that I don't think I could even produce, which is a piece of hardware that you can plug into your TV that can access streaming services for free. Doesn't need a password, doesn't need anything, can stream DStv channels for free, doesn't need anything. I'm like, whoa, how does it even work? How does it even do it? And it's just crazy to me.
How does it work? Because let's say he created like this network now of content where people can stream sport or whatever for free on DStv. You need to know that when you buy this as a South African, the moment you buy this, it's a big gamble. Because the moment the police come through the roof there, the whole SWAT team arrives through the roof at this guy's house, they're going to confiscate all the equipment, and that network is probably going to go down.
Yep.
And that means you paid.
You consuming
for a year or freaking maybe a lifetime license or whatever, and boom, offline, gone.
Imagine take him to court for that.
Yeah. So there you go. So your money, that thing he gave you or whatever, is completely useless now. That's the big risk.
So apparently it said the process of analyzing equipment seized during the raid would provide additional insights and likely to more arrests. So
I'd
as you said, that'll bring that network down.
I'd love to know how he did it. That is very interesting.
And MultiChoice also had a message for people who use pirate streaming services. It said, accessing these services puts users at risk of cyber attacks, poor service, financial loss, and a lack of support. They could also face legal action. Subscribing to pirate services can expose individuals to significant legal risks. Users may face fines or legal action for accessing content illegally. So, okay, I agree. You know, don't pirate. Not good. There's actors and things like that, you know, you would argue that they work pretty hard and they should be paid for the hard work that they've done.
And DStv needs the subscribers.
And they need the money.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, you know, what makes me laugh is it says accessing these services put users at a risk of cyber attacks, which is obviously maybe the guys that sold you this illegal, you know, thing might try and get your data and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Poor service, so maybe the pirated content that you're watching isn't as good as the premium content.
Yeah, I'm sure the quality's not great.
Financial loss in the sense that maybe you've paid a lot of money and now it's not working anymore and you've got a lack of support. You're not going to call a support center.
Yeah, when he's sleeping, you can't get support.
So I agree with all of those. But when it went on to say that subscribing to pirate services can expose users to significant legal risks, that's basically saying if you pirate we will sue you.
Yeah,
you know, so they say like risk, like if there's a risk of death, it's a risk of lawsuit here.
They're not playing, eh?
They say users may face fines or legal action for accessing this content. So yeah, don't support illegal activities, report people who are doing it, and if you so happen to find a way to circumvent those systems, do look out, contact the system providers, contact the people who are doing it and try get a kickback, try and get some money out of it for providing them with a fundamental flaw in what would be their secure system. So Apple has a great program called Apple's Bounty Program, and they have various prizes, I'd say, not prizes, but various cash incentives for reporting specific types of vulnerabilities. And one of the biggest ones is if you can find a vulnerability that installs a piece of software that gives someone full control over your phone without them having to click an install button, you get $1 million. So, I mean, that's a... Do you want to get arrested? Or do you want to make a quick buck and just report the flaw? And I would argue that if you report the flaw and they don't pay you out, you have more opportunity to make a public kind of fuss about it, that you helped them out and no one even gave you any cash, and cause a bit of a stink for them, than it is to try and create an illegal pirate network and make money there, because it's like you're like rolling the dice on your whole success. Every single day that goes by, you might be making a lot of money doing all of this piracy, but one day it's all going to disappear at once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas if you make a little bit of money from reporting this vulnerability, you might not make the same amount of money or the same amount of money for the same period of time, but you might just get a quick cash back incentive and then carry on your merrily way, you know, not getting arrested in 6 months or a year. So yeah, just if anybody had any of these pieces of hardware, I'd love to take a look at it and see what it offered.
I wonder if it's like a little box or...
Well, the next thing is, you know, that, you know, when you look at DStv, there is a pretty interesting competitor to DStv, which is OpenView. Because OpenView, you just pay for once and you have access to a whole bunch of content. And DStv and OpenView have actually fought a lot. Because
I saw that, yeah.
For half the price.
They went to court.
Yeah, for half the price of 1 month's worth of premium DStv, you get an infinite lifetime access to content as long as OpenView's network is...
They also fought over the sports rights, eMedia and OpenView, of course, against MultiChoice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's been back and forth.
I heard about that, yes.
And then DStv was all spiteful and removed some of the eMedia channels from their bouquet. And then actually won. Then eMedia, who owns all the ETV channels, they went to the competition tribunal and they actually won. And they were ordered, DStv was ordered to put those ETV channels back on the bouquets.
Cheapers, eh?
Yeah, actually won.
There's some dirty fighting
but
going
it's,
on.
Yeah, it's a back and forth thing. And yes, see that. I think it's... What do you say? The gloves are off.
Yeah, they're definitely going for the next. I mean, DStv has to pull out every stop to try and maintain some degree of market share on their 20% loss in the last financial year. 20% is a lot of money. Yeah, I mean,
it is, yeah.
It's a lot of money. So let's take a look. I mean, have you used Threads at all?
No, man. No, no desire at all. I don't even use Twitter or X.
I don't even know a friend that uses Threads.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not popular in South Africa. For anyone who doesn't know what Threads is, it's Mark Zuckerberg's, or the Meta, the creator of Facebook and Instagram and the current owner of WhatsApp, method of creating a Twitter-like social media application for users. And Threads has been going on for a while now, but it's definitely not popular in South Africa. I don't hear a lot of businesses on Threads.
Follow me on Threads. You don't hear that, eh?
No. You also don't hear follow me on X.
So true. Yeah, but people don't even say follow me on Twitter anymore. I think that's all just, it's over, you know?
100%. I think it's 2 days shipped.
Yeah.
So Antitrust Enforce has its eyes on AI, apparently, AI chips. So in an interview with the Financial Times, Jonathan Cantor says regulators may need to act urgently to keep AI from being controlled by an already dominant tech company portfolio. So for anyone who doesn't know, there's only so few AI companies. There are AI, there's many, many companies that use foundationally core AI tech that belongs to very specific companies. So there is a lot of attention happening now from antitrust enforcers looking at AI companies and saying, well, who's trying to pick up the most monopoly? Where do we have, you know, monopolistic risks? And how do we enforce countermeasures to prevent people from being able to do that? And that kind of makes sense. Also, Boeing, the guys getting in so much trouble all the time about their planes these days. It's kind of everywhere. Boeing's first crewed Starliner mission is about to dock with the ISS. So SpaceX isn't the only one busy, as the finally launched Starliner, which is from Boeing, is closing in on the International Space Station, and astronauts Butch Wildermuth and Sonny Williams have already performed about 2 hours of pre-flight demonstrations, and more are planned despite additional helium leaks detected by the flight controllers overnight. The autonomous docking procedure is or was scheduled for about 6 p.m. on Friday evening. So by now, I'm sure they've docked or we would have heard about it. But it's crazy. I mean, we saw Amazon get to space. We saw Virgin Galactic get to space. We've seen SpaceX get to space. NASA's been to space. Russia just landed on the moon. India even made it to the moon before anyone else, I think.
Everybody's leaving planet Earth, basically.
We are literally in orbit now at this point. And speaking of orbit, we've spoken about it. SpaceX's Starship. Does that bring back any memories for you?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So, that's Elon's, one of Elon's big dreams, say.
Yeah, so the SpaceX Starship is supposed to be Elon Musk's, or at least SpaceX's attempt to create a vehicle which can take people to Mars. It's a large vehicle, can house a lot of people in it, a lot more weight. One of the heaviest spaceships on the planet. Ever made, one of the heaviest objects to ever be thrusted into space. And also, SpaceX's Starship attempted to launch 3 times already, and each time resulted in an explosion and the ultimate loss of that equipment. So the Starship is not a cheap enterprise for SpaceX. It is very much a very important project for Elon Musk, and they just launched their 4th attempt. And apparently have successfully launched, orbited, and landed the Starship for the first time, even though they did experience some damage to one of the fins on the Starship. But I mean, when you're looking at 3 previous attempts all ended in an explosion, and you have a successful dock down of the heaviest object on Earth ever being sent into space and coming back and landing, I think that's pretty impressive, I must say. 4th time's the charm.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm sure old Elon is very chuffed.
I would be ecstatic. I mean, geez. It shows them that they learned from each of their efforts. And it was really cool for me, because it really shows you that when you have to take risks, you have to accommodate for loss. Some companies might have taken the approach of, we have to get it right the first time. We only have one shot at this. And their approach is, we probably only have one shot, but if we need to do 4, we'll do 4. And they get it right on the 4th time. So if they had given up on 1 or 2 or 3, we would never have had the heaviest object on Earth leave our Earth and return to our Earth landing successful if we didn't try it the 4th time. So never give up.
Yeah, that's the lesson.
Never give up.
Never give up.
Chase your dream.
The 4th time could be your lucky one, or even the 100th time.
And on that note, is it time for some music?
It is. Let's go for some more music. And we're back with Tech Plus, wrapping it up, almost wrapping it up for another week. Kane, what have you got for us next?
apparently Netflix is planning a redesign.
Ooh, of what? Like the platform or the logo? So the logo looks like it's already been redesigned.
Eh? Yeah, don't change what isn't broken. That's what I always
say. Yeah, I don't know what it is with these companies. The minute they're not doing too well, they just do a rebrand. Have you noticed?
I have.
Even young companies, that's not going so great. Let's just rebrand, and then it's like this huge freaking fanfare and things for a week or two. It's a hot topic, and then it's just back to the way it was.
It's crazy. And you know what actually blows my mind is that when I worked a lot in the tech startup realm, a lot of the time companies would find funding, kind of stall out, and then they would rebrand. Mm. But what they didn't realize is the momentum that they had ascertained, albeit small, is completely disintegrated upon rebranding, because those people don't see it happen, and they just think you're gone. They don't know you operating underneath a new handle. They can't re-find you again.
Exactly.
And that can be a problem. So Netflix is testing a big homepage redesign on its TV app. The new look replaces the static tiles containing the shows and movies you want to watch with boxes that extend as soon as your remote lands on them. It's a change from how Netflix's existing homepage works, which currently surfaces a title's trailer and other information at the very top of its interface when you scroll over it. The new design, on the other hand, consolidates things, making all the information you're looking for much more prominent on your screen. However, over a TV show or movie long enough, and Netflix will begin playing a short preview directly within the title. Below the box, you'll find all the information about a title, including its synopsis, the year it was released, the number of episodes, and its genre. They also went on to say that we often see members doing gymnastics with their eyes as they're scanning the home experience. Fair enough. Well, I would argue that the eyes aren't the problem. The poorly written movie synopsis are horrible. Yes. Oh, the world's
and the
worst.
Font size, yeah.
It's like, how do you make a good movie sound as boring as possible? Whoever writes those is literally an expert at that.
Yeah, so true.
And they went on to say that we really wanted members to have an easier time figuring out if a title is right for them. The good old UI rebrand. I hope it works.
And I hope it doesn't cause problems and freeze and stuff.
Yeah, nothing worse than having a new look but no feel.
Yeah, whatever freaking, a lot of times people upgrade apps and then it doesn't work properly anymore. It crashes your media box.
And that's not the only thing Netflix will be doing. Apparently, Netflix is also going to be launching support with MetaQuest. So anyone who doesn't know what MetaQuest is, MetaQuest are the VR headsets that Facebook's developed. You've got the Quest 1, Quest 2, and now the newly released Quest 3. And inside of the Quest 3 is a full-on virtual world where you can, sync your PC with and see your PC and work on your PC. You can operate only within the Quest and do things that is specifically loaded into the Quest. And now you can also launch the web browser and go watch Netflix in VR. Now, I don't know how far that'll extend to VR-supported playback and VR movies and all that kind of jazz, but it does mean you can pop on your virtual reality headset and put up a 85-inch TV in front of your eyes that looks as clear as you can see now and watch on the biggest screen that, on a cinema-level big screen and enjoy it. And I love that. I think that's really cool. I don't know if you've ever... people might think, what the hell is the point of sitting in my lounge, putting on a VR headset and watching a 70-inch TV? When even if I have a 50-inch TV or 40-inch TV, it'll do just fine.
Yeah.
Yes. But just imagine for a second that you're not in your room. Maybe you're in a plane in economy. And when you're in this plane in economy, you can put your headset on. Everybody disappears.
Hmm.
And you just have a massive screen, not directly in front of you, so that you have to tilt your head back and form a double chin just to see what's going on. But you can actually see far, 5-10 meters away from you is a massive screen, as if you're in a car watching one of those old school mega projector-like environments, Mm. Or maybe you just in your plane and you go into your virtual desktop where you have 3 or 4 or 5 different screens all around you and virtual keyboards and some movable space around you. Like there's actually more room to see around. It's a completely different experience when you get out of your comfort zone and you're in an enclosed, uncomfortable space that you have no control over its size or dimensions. Maybe you go to another country and it's very expensive and you're in a very small room which hardly has space for your laptop. pop your headset on. If you've got a cinema experience to watch movies, if you want to watch movies, you've got a studio-like environment to work on multiple PC screens at once. It's not perfect. It's still growing.
It sounds really nice.
It is really nice.
The way you describe it, really, it's selling it to me.
And that is, in essence, when you can walk around your house and assign virtual screens all over the place. So let's do an example of what AR, VR might be like. For anyone who doesn't know what that means, is augmented reality and virtual reality are essentially two different things. And you can think of them very simply. Virtual reality is essentially the replacement of your entire reality. So everything you see around you disappears and is replaced with something virtual. Augmented reality is when nothing disappears, but you can overlay digital information and digital assets within your physical space. So to give you an example of what I mean by that is, if you're in the plane and you're in AR, you can still see everyone around you on the plane, but you have screens in front of you, things that you can move around. And if we do a practical example of it, if you had AR glasses, or you use something like Meta Quest 3 or Apple Vision Pro's AR features, you can be in your house just as you normally are, and you can start setting up some digital reality elements that overlay your physical reality. So let's say you're cooking some food. You can put a screen up in front of you that has a cooking show on it. Right above your stove, where there is no TV now, you can just put up a virtual display, and as clear as a normal TV would be, and as big or as small as you want it, can be there. And if you turned around and you look to your corridor, your hallway, or your lounge area, you might have another virtual display up that's just showing you the weather for the day, right? And then if you walk out and you go into your office, you might have a laptop, but you also have 5 virtual screens that is connected to your laptop that you can look at and see.
Wow, right? That sounds really cool.
And you can move things around. You can, let's say you're watching TV, you can see through the headset and watch the TV, and next to you, you can have a virtual workstation or a studio-like tablet where you can take notes and do things and draw and do whatever you want to do. That is what I think is going to be some really cool features of VR, and getting things like the Meta Quest to be able to, you know, use their web browser to watch Netflix is just a small part of that process. But if you think that wearing a big headset and walking around is going to be very difficult, the most, I think, influential tech that we'll see is glasses-sized AR tech. So your Ray-Ban-sized glasses is your virtual device. And it can do everything a big clunky headset can do. Just like back in the day, you had these massive phones that were bigger than your whole palm together with
bigger
your
than
other
your
palm,
head.
Bigger than your forearm and heavier than a dumbbell. And now you've got, you can have a tiny little phone that does 20,000 more things than the other one, you know? So as we evolve and as tech gets more advanced, these things will become smaller and these kind of utilities will actually be accessible and make sense. And I think that's something worth looking forward to.
Definitely.
Especially in schools, because if you have 40 kids in a classroom, good luck getting them all outside and getting them to a place that they can go. Now, let's say you want to teach your kids in your class about how a caterpillar walks, and you go out into your schoolyard and you find one caterpillar and there's 3 classrooms worth of people, 120 kids trying to see one caterpillar.
That's not
impossible.
Yeah.
But with VR, you can blow the caterpillar up so that's the size of a car.
Yeah.
And it can walk past everyone.
Wow, that's pretty.
And that's a big difference.
Yeah.
And the kids can actually sit there and build the caterpillar. So you can break the caterpillar's body apart and they can reassemble it in a non-gory kind of way. And then it would become alive if assembled correctly. And you can teach about animal cells and plant cells and mitochondria and photosynthesis. And you can teach about how the human body works. And you can make a person the size of a red blood cell and let them travel through the human body.
Yeah.
You can do a lot of things.
It'll probably be rolled out in private schools first, you know, fancy kids.
VR headsets are already in schools.
Yeah.
I'm
sure the fancy schools, you know, especially the all-boys schools.
Yep.
I think they'll probably roll out those first. You know, those parents pay a lot of money anyway.
So now we will talk about a few other topics, some kind of FOSS facts about some tech news that you might find interesting. We have the Apple Intelligence, which is Apple's AI technology, will automatically choose between on-device and cloud-powered AI. All that means is sometimes your phone itself will do the work that AI requires, and sometimes the cloud will do the work that AI is required. Then there's a new technology called nature-based carbon removal, which is somewhat as good as artificial carbon removal, and that's essentially using nature to capture carbon and reduce the overall effects of global warming. And we're seeing a lot of technology develop there, which we'll be talking about next week as well. We're also taking a look at Tesla CEO Elon Musk could leave if a $56 billion pay package is not approved. This is something that the shareholders have warned, and we'll definitely talk about that next week as that'll be coming into the spotlight. Microsoft is now competing for DLSS, which is using AI to improve your gameplay. And that's very, very interesting, and that might make some considerable tech advancements and help that monopoly problem with NVIDIA. eBay will no longer accept American Express cards over what they claim as unacceptably high fees. Now, in South Africa, we don't really have an eBay, but I know a lot of people actually buy a lot of repair parts from eBay, which is very interesting that there is still that kind of market. Then in the last piece, we're talking about iPhone and Apple watches are no longer covered under warranty if they have hairline cracks. So if there's a hairline crack on your Apple Watch or there's a hairline crack on your iPhone, it will no longer be covered under warranty. And the last piece of news we have is, this is crazy. NVIDIA is now more valuable than Apple at $3.01 trillion.
Wowee.
So
this NVIDIA is doing really well.
It's not as big as NVIDIA now. And Apple's huge. Apple has a device in many people's hands around the world. And NVIDIA just passed them in their overall value. Wow. So going back to that thing we spoke about, you know, not every single thing you invest in is going to net you 458x over 10 years. But if it does, it will most certainly be a top competing company. So ask them, what do you think will be the top competing companies in 10 years from now? And maybe you too can also, you know, grow with these companies, make some money with these companies. And I think all it takes is a person just to sit down and think, well, what could it be? What is a good bet? And don't go spending thousands of rands. Just do something small.
Who would you invest in, or are you not going to say?
As of now.
Yeah, oh, right, yeah. Now. Right.
Non-financial now. Advice, of course, but I would definitely OpenAI for ChatGPT. Okay,
So anything AI related would be a good bet.
Well, that's its whole category of its own, where there's going to be businesses that win and lose, but you know, you got the ones that are the most mainstream that are probably going to have like a monopoly advantage and grow pretty fast. It's going to be your OpenAIs and your Midjourneys and your, so OpenAI is like a large language model, Midjourney is like an image maker. So I'll definitely put some money there. Electric vehicles, definitely.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
Tesla, most definitely. A lot of your mainstream car brands are actually going into EVs now, and I think if you looked at what are their pillars or their most valuable visionary elements for what the future of electric vehicles will be to them, you might find one or two that resonate with you that you feel are very likely to succeed above and beyond something just like Tesla. Satellite internet, definitely. SpaceX, Amazon's Kuiper, also space travel related stuff, anything that, you know, Virgin Active's galactic commercializing or creating a tourism industry around space travel, I think that'll definitely be a big one. Anything to do with recycling
solar,
greenhouse gas stuff. Yeah, so alternative power systems and things that can capture carbon or desalinate, or, you know, things that will be critical on other planets, interplanetary travel would be a good way to judge whether or not it's a good bet, because that's the ultimate goal. But reducing carbon, reducing non-renewable resource consumption, I think that's all really great pillars to look into. And then, you know, the future of digital currency. You know, where's the money going to go in 10 years from now? Is it going to still be as cash? I doubt it. But if it's not as cash, what will it be and where will that be? I'll definitely consider looking at something like that. And that will probably be where I start thinking about, you know.
Some wise advice, eh?
Never know until you know. You might as well give it a go.
And so the poet who doesn't know it is leaving. Okay? Kane, thank you so much. Once again, great show. And hope you're going to have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you very much. And to all of our listeners, thank you for listening in. We'll see you same time, same place next week.
Absolutely. Goodbye.
Goodbye.